Hi, it's Diane. On my mind, the pandemic, women, and the workforce. As the coronavirus dragged into the fall with no sign of letting up, it became clear just how big an economic toll the current recession is taking, especially on women. Last September, 865,000 women dropped out of the workforce. That's compared to 216,000 men. The reasons are varied, according to economists. It's an issue my guest today, Bridget Schulte, has explored for years. She's director of the Better Life Lab, the Work Family Justice Program at New America, a nonpartisan think tank. I spoke with her Tuesday morning. Bridget, we know that the economic fallout from the COVID pandemic is disproportionately affecting women. Give us a sense of the numbers.
Yeah, I think some of the most astounding numbers are really some of the most recent numbers. You know, the first thing to remember is throughout the entire pandemic, women have been more impacted by furloughs, unemployment, layoffs, because they are overrepresented in the industries that have been most affected by the pandemic: retail, restaurants, hospitality, service, health, education. These are industries that women are overrepresented in, and so they have been most impacted throughout the pandemic. You know, at one point, 95% of the population was under stay-at-home orders. So if you worked in a restaurant, the restaurant was shut. There was no work to be had. You know, so in previous recessions that typically impact construction, manufacturing, and trade, those are very male-dominated fields. And so men have typically been more impacted, say, in the 2008 recession. This is very different, which is why some economists have called this the she-cession. And then you layer on top of that the fact that more women are impacted by job losses. You layer on top of that the fact that so many schools have closed, childcare facilities have closed. There simply is not the backup for families who need care. So to me, some of the most astounding numbers really came out in September, analyzing job losses from August to September. About a little over 1 million people dropped out of the workforce, and 80% of them were women.
Wow.
It's an enormous, enormous impact. It is, you know, and I'm talking mainly about the United States, but these are figures that are also, you're seeing in countries all around the world.
So is it affecting women across all economic levels?
Well, it is. And yet, it's in a very interesting twist, sort of what we're seeing in this pandemic is that women who have more professional jobs, who can work remotely, however difficult that might be as you're juggling homeschooling or childcare, if you're able to work remotely, it's really become a marker of class, so that the women who are most impacted are the lower wage hourly workers. So there has been a real disproportionate impact, not only socioeconomically, but across racial and ethnic lines as well. Black women, Latinas, much more impacted by the pandemic, which is why it's so important then to look at the flip side of how we're responding to it. And the response has really not met the intense and great need out there. You know, some of the most impacted people we have to remember are single mothers. How many of them are essential frontline workers? They're home health aides, certified nursing assistants. You know, they're the ones that are working in the grocery stores or the Amazon warehouses. And no childcare, needing to work. Many of them do not qualify for emergency paid sick days or emergency paid family leave that Congress passed in the spring. They are really stuck. So yes, women are suffering, but I think it's, women with fewer means and resources are suffering the most.
Is it true that, in fact, this could really turn the clock back on women's achievements decades?
Well, this is a concern. It is absolutely a concern. Many economists are saying women will be set back. It's just a question of how far. 5 years, 10 years, a generation. You know, there have been studies that talk about, you know, women are much more likely to reduce their work hours, or as we've seen with the September numbers, you know, they're forced out altogether, you know, really pushed out of the workplace. And so the question is, what's going to happen when we return to some kind of new normal? What kinds of jobs will return? Will women be able to get back into those jobs? Will they be at a sort of a lower position? Have they lost opportunities for promotion? So we're talking not only about immediate wage loss, but we're talking about potential long-term loss in terms of, you know, advancement or promotion or the ability to earn higher wages. So potentially the impact that you could see it even affecting retirement savings and retirement income. So yes, this is an enormous, enormous impact on women.
So what about childcare or the lack of it, and how much of a role that's playing in why women are leaving the workplace?
It's an incredible impact. You know, the first impact, as we talked about, is the fact that so many more women are in industries affected by the shutdowns and being closed. But there is no doubt that the fact that there is no reliable schooling, there is no reliable childcare, has made an enormous impact, not just in the United States, but globally. In the middle of a pandemic, when it is unsafe to send children, you know, to a physical location, it's unsafe not just for children, it's unsafe for the teachers, it's unsafe for the early care educators. It's been an enormous burden for families, and women have been picking up that burden far more than men.
And it's also unpredictable from week to week and day to day almost. Mothers, fathers don't know whether the child is going to be at home, remote schooling, or whether they're going to be in class.
That's exactly right. When you talk to people, as I've been doing some reporting through the pandemic, that's one of the most difficult things is the inability to predict or plan. Are schools going to be in person? Are they online? Is it a hybrid? They keep changing. You know, some of that is simply the nature of the pandemic and the unfortunate way that leaders in this country have really failed to respond to the challenge. Other countries have been much more proactive in terms of testing, in terms of social distancing, in terms of closures. In this country, the Trump administration left it up to many states. The idea of whether you wore a mask or not very quickly became a political kind of issue rather than a public health issue. So the response from leadership in this country has made it worse, which you can see in the growing numbers of cases, in the growing numbers of people who are dying, and in the disproportionate impact that communities of color are feeling in terms of infections and death rates. So the unpredictability is incredibly anxiety provoking, but so is the fact that that people haven't been able to trust leaders. They haven't been able to trust the CDC. For instance, my family, we all did get COVID. My daughter came home from college with it. We all became sick, and I found myself unable to trust the CDC website. I ended up using public health from Harvard and other sort of academic institutions. So that's another stress that I think cannot be underestimated.
Tell me about the gender pay gap and to what extent that's affecting women.
It is another enormous part of the equation of trying to understand what's going on. What people need to understand is that even before COVID, there were large gender disparities. Even before COVID, women were doing about twice the amount of housework and childcare, even when they worked full time, if you look at time diary data from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. You know, before COVID, there were large gender gaps. COVID has, as I spoke with someone the other day, they said COVID has turned everything up to 11 and then broken the knob off. So when you look at, you know, why is it that women are being disproportionately the ones who are taking on the homeschooling or spending more time in the childcare? It's not that men aren't. I think that's an important thing to point out. What the surveys are showing is that many men who are working at home, they are picking up more housework. They are picking up more childcare. That is changing. The difference is it's still a huge gap that women are still doing more of it and they're still sort of the primary person. Why that is, you know, then understanding the pay gap is a really important part of understanding what drives that. So even before COVID, there's no doubt we talk about the gendered pay gap that women earn, you know, less than men do. It's for really a couple reasons. And one is that we simply don't value women's work. When you look at what's the professions that women go into versus what men go into, men's professions tend to pay a lot more than women. Say men are more represented in, say, finance or in computer science. So those jobs are high paying. Women tend to be in education, social work, the helping professions, care professions, and those are far less, they're paid at a much lower level. So that's sort of an occupational segregation pay gap you see. But at the same time, there's other pay gaps that show that even when you're in the same profession, women tend to earn less, even when they work the same amount of hours, they're the same education level, that economists have said you cannot explain in any other way than to say that's discrimination, so gender discrimination. So when you think about it, most couples, the men tend to be older, so they tend to be just that much farther ahead in their careers. They're already in professions where they're earning more than women. And so when you are in a situation of stress and the schools are closed and the childcare is closed and couples have to make decisions about whose job to prioritize, who can be more flexible and take care of the kids, it is not surprising that they tend to favor or be forced to choose the man's job, the man's profession, simply because you have to survive. In the United States, unlike so many other advanced economies, we do not have family supportive policies. And it all comes down to how much you can afford as a private family, as a private citizen. You have to pay so much out of pocket for health and education that other countries have more public policies for. So sadly, the way that we've set up our policies in this country sort of force families to make those decisions that would prioritize men going to work and women caring. So we have chosen through our policies to reinforce traditional gender gaps that disadvantage women.
A quick break. When we come back, more of my conversation with Bridget Schulte.
DCS Daily.
DCS Daily.
DCS Daily.
It's news,
culture, and curiosities.
From the District, Tacoma Park,
Alexandria,
Friendship Heights,
Hyattsville,
Falls Church,
Northeast Washington, D.C., in your inbox every weekday afternoon.
DCS Daily.
Sign up at dcs.com/newsletter.
dcs.com/newsletter.
Here's the rest of my conversation with Bridget Schulte. She's director of the Better Life Lab at New America. You mentioned other countries. How have they been handling these differences between men and women during this COVID period?
Well, I think it's important to point out that women have been disproportionately impacted around the globe, and a lot of that is because women are disproportionately represented in these industries around the globe that have been disproportionately affected. Again, retail, restaurants, travel, hospitality. So there's no doubt that women around the globe are feeling these disproportionate impacts. It's also clear from surveys and studies around the globe that women are also picking up more of the homeschooling and the childcare. The difference is that many countries already have, say, paid sick days. We do not have that in the United States. We had an emergency provision that Congress passed, but then they exempted anyone who worked for a large company. So if you worked for Target and were or Walmart or were an essential worker, you were exempted from this emergency paid sick days. If you worked for healthcare, you were exempted. So you had all these home health aides really forced to make these life or death decisions. Do I go to work? so that I can pay my bills and put food on the table and risk getting sick or risk exposing my client. So the difference is other countries had much more family supportive policies already in place that cushioned the blow, so to speak. So it's not that women have not been affected disproportionately, they have. But there are other decisions that leaders made to either cushion the blow through paid leave or paid sick days, or frankly, they made decisions in many countries to put restrictions on bars and restaurants and places where we know the virus is more likely to spread, and then put a priority on safely reopening childcare and schools. And we did not do that in this country.
Indeed. And it feels as though all of these issues have been around for quite a while, but that somehow this COVID virus has brought everything to the fore and really now demonstrates the ways in which women have been so adversely affected by these policies, with lack of childcare policies in the first and foremost place. So that for women balancing this home and work environment is just getting worse.
Absolutely. I think it's important to remember before COVID, childcare did not work in the United States. As you and I have spoken before, I was part of a major study at New America, and it's one of many that others have done that really found that our childcare, we don't really have a childcare system. It's a broken sort of patchwork that parents are expected to pay so much out of pocket. It's so much more expensive than most parents can afford. It's very difficult to find quality childcare, and that the care educators and teachers, they're earning poverty wages. You know, about half of them earn so little that they qualify for, you know, public benefits like Medicaid and food stamps. And, you know, so it wasn't working before COVID. And then during COVID, I think the other thing that's just really startling, in surveys, when people ask childcare providers, how are you doing? Are you going to be able to stay open? So many of them can't. We are at risk of losing up to 1 million childcare slots in an already broken system. And so part of that is, well, why? So when you look at when Congress was looking at bailout packages in the spring and how they were going to try to help keep the economy going and how to help families survive this really difficult global pandemic, they did give initially about $3 billion to the childcare industry. And it sounds like, oh, well, that's great. Well, that's as much as they gave Delta Airlines, one airline, versus the entire childcare infrastructure. And that is simply not enough. That certainly helped for a short period of time. But I've talked to providers all over the country that, you know, they can't have as many children, so they aren't earning as much money. They are no longer taking pay. They're going into debt. They're using their own credit cards to buy personal protective gear and do all the extra cleaning. You know, these are women, largely women, a lot of them women of color, immigrant women, who do so much of this work because they love it and they love children. And they are really suffering and bearing the brunt of this. You know, and when you look at, they won't be able to stay open without some additional help. And House Democrats did pass a $50 billion proposal just to shore up childcare, but it's been stuck in the Senate. So there's been no action since early spring, and families and the whole childcare infrastructure is incredibly suffering as a result.
Now, what happens, Bridget, when women try to get back into the workplace, having lost this amount of time?
That is going to be an open question. We're just going to have to see. Will they be penalized because they somehow weren't able to manage how doing it all? Will they not be seen as productive? I can't tell you how many conversations that I've had that have been so disturbing. Women who are really trying to do it all, frankly, trying to work, trying to be productive. And these are women who can work remotely, and their children are coming in, and their partners are helping, but certainly not taking on the, you know, shared responsibility. And because they're not as productive, quote unquote, as they had been before, because they're working early in the morning and then trying to teach school and then staying up late at night and then not getting any sleep because they're trying to really do two things at once, they're being let go and being told, it's too bad that you're not as productive. We're going to have to let you go. That's just criminal. You know, when you look big picture, why is it important to have diversity? There have been study after study that shows when you have more equity and more diversity in management, in companies, you make better decisions. MIT has done fascinating research that your collective intelligence increases when you have more women as part of an organization or a group. Lots of studies show that companies are much more profitable. You make better decisions. So if we lose all of this talent, you know, if we lose all of this productivity, we all lose. It's really incumbent upon all of us to try to figure out how to preserve the, you know, the skills, the excellence and the talent that women have and bring to the workforce.
Clearly, President-elect Biden would agree with much of what you've said. What kinds of proposals do you believe will be forthcoming from his administration addressing some of the issues you've spoken of?
So this is one thing that's very hopeful. President-elect Biden, like all of the other Democratic presidential contenders, actually very early on came out and embraced the fact that we need a national paid family and medical leave policy, finally bringing us into the, you know, kind of like the, where the rest of the world already is. We are one of the few countries, along with Papua New Guinea, that does not guarantee paid maternity leave. And other countries have been doing it for over a century. So we are embarrassingly out of step. And so the fact that, you know, that he's coming in with that strong position is really important for families and women. And frankly, for men, you know, gender equality is good for men as well. Surveys show that men want to be caregivers, and yet we make it very difficult in our workplaces and our policy to enable them to do that. And we really won't get to true gender equality at work until we have more of that gender equality at home. The other thing that President-elect Biden has done that is really quite remarkable is that he has a, you know, over $700 billion care plan. Elizabeth Warren brought a lot of attention to the fact that our care systems are broken in this country during the campaign. And I think this is part of her legacy, that President-elect Biden really listened to that. We'll see what ends up happening, but this is a plan that would shore up childcare, that would ensure that caregivers actually make decent wages. You know, the proof will be in the pudding, but the intention is there, the attention is there. I think it's also going to be really important to see who wins the Senate, and we could be right back where we were in the second Obama administration, where there were a number of supportive and progressive policies that didn't go anywhere because you had a Republican Senate that was just intent on shutting down anything that he was going to do. President-elect Biden has talked about trying to work across party lines. He comes from more of that tradition. I have been in Washington long enough, and you know, you as well. I remember when both parties could work together and come up with bipartisan legislation. And sadly, for the last decade or so, that's been impossible. It'll be interesting to see, can he usher in a new era? Can we actually get something done? Because it's one thing to have a great plan, and it's another thing to actually get it passed and make it real.
Indeed. And if you had one message to the Biden administration, to the president-elect himself, what would it be?
Care is what makes all the other, it's the work that makes all other work work, as Ai-Jen Poo says. Care is critical, and it's just as important, if not more important, than breadwinning. And we really need to understand that and center it in our public policy, in the way that we invest in the future. That's really what this is. Care is what makes life worthwhile, and we make it very difficult in this country. And let's work to make it not so difficult.
Bridget, thank you so much.
Thank you. Great to talk to you.
That was Bridget Schulte, director of the Better Life Lab, the Work Family Justice Program at New America, a nonpartisan think tank. And that's all for today. Thanks to those of you who've written in to let us know what's on your mind. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter, or send us an email, drpodcast@wamu.org. Our theme music is composed by Jim Brunberg and Ben Landsberg of Wonderly. The show is produced by Rebecca Kaufman and Allison Brody. Thanks for listening, all, and please continue to wear those masks, take care of yourself and those you love. I'm Diane Rehm.